Joining me on the line is Benjamin Wanthal to have a conversation and talk about this issue. Thank you. A very good morning, and thanks for taking the time to chat to us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So, obviously, based here in South Africa, the activities of BDS, and particularly BDS South Africa, are deeply relevant to us. We know that in Cape Town, in fact, BDS and Hamas share an office. We're not particularly surprised by this type of activity. What is a surprise is that nobody, or very, very few people seem to be taking this seriously. Why do you think that is? You wrote an article, I shared it certainly on my Twitter. A few people have shared it here in South Africa, but no one really seems to be too bothered by it.
Well, it's a good question. In my work as a correspondent for the Jerusalem Post, and I'm also a fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a nonpartisan tank, Washington, I've worked on exposing financial streams for BDS organizations. And many of my exposés have revealed that these BDS entities have connections to terrorist organizations. For example, BDS South Africa has had a long-standing relationship with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the EU and U.S. classified terrorist organization. Why there has been very little attention is, I think, probably a cause of the BDS organization's use of human rights language to deflect any type of rigorous scrutiny of their work, that they're a peaceful organization, that they somehow are the legacy of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, of the legacy of Nelson Mandela, etc. Of course, that has been debunked, namely they're, in my view, peaceful organizations. These are organizations that are contaminated with contemporary anti-Semitism. And many of these organizations, for example, BDS South Africa, are deeply embroiled in terrorism finance.
What's also interesting to me is and in fact I think they've done a tremendous amount of, I mean, I think they've gained a lot of headway with this, is if ever I've tweet something or mentioned something or write an article about the links to a terror organization, the immediate response is, well, Nelson Mandela was classified as a terrorist as well, so as if to discredit the very notion of it being a terror organization. So what they seem to have done quite powerfully is actually taken the sting out of the word terror, because by suggesting that Nelson Mandela was classified as a terrorist at some point by the South African apartheid government kind of says, well, hold on, then maybe the PFLP is just a freedom-fighting organization. Of course, when you go back and say, well, does that mean do you believe that ISIS is not a terror organization, because that's one clearly that everybody agrees with, then it gets confusing. But my thought is that they have actually taken the sting and the meaning out of the real word terror.
Yeah, I think that point is well taken. I mean, in the 9/11 world, we have modernized definitions of political terrorism, and I think these groups, even before 9/11, for example, the PFLP, of course, met the criteria for political terrorism.
Sure.
Other cases I've worked on involve a neo-Nazi organization / party in Germany called the Third Way that worked closely with Hezbollah, a Lebanese terrorist organization that's considered by the U.S. to be a terrorist organization, and the EU has designated the so-called military wing, but Britain, for example, just designated all of Hezbollah a terrorist organization, and this neo-Nazi party, the Third Way, has worked with Hezbollah and, I would add, the regime of the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad over the years, and this organization, the Third Way, supports BDS, is a passionate supporter of BDS. After I uncovered their PayPal account, earlier this year, PayPal, which has showed a greater sensitivity toward blocking finance of terrorism, pulled the plug on the account for this neo-Nazi organization. So groups like BDS South Africa have to ask themselves, why are we, BDS South Africa, in the same camp as a neo-Nazi party in Germany and a full-blown Palestinian terrorist organization? Why are we aligned with them? Why are we supporting their aims? And I think once that question is asked, one realizes that BDS South Africa is not a peace organization. It is a, you know, it's an anti-Semitic organization that advances the goals of terrorism.
At the time of writing your article, certainly, or so when I read it earlier in the week, there wasn't a comment from PayPal. Have they confirmed that that is indeed the case?
Is PayPal concerned that?
No, did they confirm? Because at the time you couldn't follow the PayPal link to make a donation to BDS South Africa, but PayPal hadn't issued a statement in that regard at that point. Have they come out with anything, or do they just rather not comment on these things and just remove that facility?
Well, it's been a mixed bag. I see minutes or seconds actually before this interview started, PayPal sent me a response, and I have to go into it. It's in response to my query, which has been going on now for several days, about, you know, what was the reason that BDS South Africa's account is not working. It simply says that you can't donate at this time when you click on to the donation section on the website. So it's been a mixed bag over the years. Sometimes PayPal will tell me, well, we closed the account because of, you know, they would allude to violations of PayPal's policy against hatred and you know, internal, it looks like along the lines of, you know, it violated their anti-discrimination policy or policies against hatred. In other cases involving terrorism, they just didn't really say in some of these cases why they closed the account, but the account was shut down. So it hasn't been as crystal clear as I would like as a journalist, so I can convey this material or information to my readers as to why PayPal has shut down these accounts. But they are shutting them down, in contrast to some banks, for example. BDS South Africa uses the First National Bank as its donor section online. And the First National has vehemently opposed closing the account, even though it's possibly involved in illicit terror finance.
Right. So how do we deal with that? I mean, where does the pressure come from? Is there, do we need to report it? Do we need to go to the, ombudsman? Do clients of FNB need to alert them to it? How does this pressure normally work for these organizations?
Well, I was, you know, somewhat stunned that up until now, not one South African daily, with the exception of a South African Jewish newspaper, reported on the possible closure of the PayPal account. In fact, I've read nothing in the South African media, in the in the mainstream.
There is
media
nothing. There is nothing. I'm very, very
BDS
close.
South Africa's connections to terrorist organizations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their hardcore anti-Semitism, the interplay between these two important, you know, these two factors in the South African media. So one, obviously, if there was more journalistic curiosity on the part of South African journalists to report on this, that would certainly, I think, raise the stakes. And certainly politicians who are concerned about blunting terrorism could weigh in and investigate South Africa's First National Bank and ask why they're involved in terror finance, or possibly involved in terror finance. I don't know enough about the bank regulatory system in South Africa, but certainly I would imagine there's some regulation, and whether the regulatory structure would look into this is another question. But the owners and the customers of First National Bank have to ask themselves, why are we involved in, you know, possibly in advancing the goals of terrorism?
Right. Well, I think that here on this show, I think what we're going to do is try and get hold of FNB during the course of. I think what we're going to do here on the Morning Mayhem is get hold of FNB for next week and put the question directly to them if they are prepared to come and have that conversation with us. I do think it's a relevant conversation. And in fact, what you might or might not be aware of is that it is the South African banking system. During the last number of years where we had an incredibly corrupt government, it was the banking system that managed to do real damage to a corrupt government by refusing to bank many of the participants and the companies that were involved with state capture. And by doing so, they effectively created they created the tipping point for government to be forced to deal with it. So we do know that South African banks have a long history of showing moral courage and doing the right thing. Why they are choosing to ignore this is obviously for various other factors, or maybe simply because there isn't enough pressure on them. So it is something that we actually have a responsibility to start doing. And I think that's certainly an area that we need to look into.
Interesting. I mean, there's other avenues where one could, impose pressure on First National Bank to close its account with BDS South Africa. For example, corresponding bank relations with bank relationships with First National Bank. It's corresponding banks, you know, that conduct business with First National Bank in the United Kingdom, United States, Australia, for example. These, you know, major economic powerhouse countries could, stop working with First National until it closes its account with BDS South Africa to prevent terror finance. So there's all sorts of pressure points. It's just a matter of, whether responsible banks and other entities are willing to ramp up the pace of pressure on First National Bank. First National Bank has been completely indifferent to their account with BDS South Africa. So it's, from my perspective, largely inexplicable why they're allowing this account to function.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. Thank you very, very much both for the very important article and for taking the time to chat to us. That's Benjamin Weinthaler.